I think we can all agree the current political moment is fraught. But how does it compare to the other fraught political moments in history?
It felt for a time in part of that decade like everything was falling apart. Young people against old people, anti-war violence, peace movement.
I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. And this week, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about difficult times in America's history and how its people overcame them. The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Phoebe. One of our favorite things to do is to bring the show out on the road and perform stories live. We've done it for years now, all over the country. It's really just a chance for people to see me screw up reading lines. But we've always thought it was a lot of fun to be able to look out into the audience and see people's reactions to these stories right away. Maybe they're laughing. Maybe they've fallen asleep. Depends on the city. Just kidding. We were planning on going out on a tour right after the coronavirus pandemic began, and we had to cancel that. We hope we'll get back out there to maybe see all of you one day again soon. Until then, we thought we'd bring you one of our favorite stories that we've ever done live. If you like, you can close your eyes and pretend you're in a theater somewhere, looking up at a big screen on stage. On Sunday night, November 22, 1987, something very odd happened in the middle of the 9 o'clock news in Chicago.
McMahon and McKinnon, 14-0 Bears, then the defense, which hadn't put up a sack in 12 quarters, finally did. Well, if you're wondering what's happened, so am I.
This is Dan Rohn. He was a sportscaster at WGN in Chicago.
I was in the middle of a sports cast, and we were talking about the Bears, and all of a sudden, being in studio, we didn't have the off-air feed available. We just had our studio feed. So I was just told in my ear by a producer that we're having some signal difficulties, and we'll get back as soon as we can. So that was a little disconcerting at the time, and then they said, well, we're coming back up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And my reaction was what it was. I said, if you're wondering what happened, so am I.
Dan Rohn is still the sportscaster at WGN today. I'm from Chicago and have been seeing him on TV since I was a little girl. WGN is a major network. It used to be owned by the same company that owns the Chicago Tribune. And for a long time, it's where all the Chicago Cubs games were broadcast. It's not some small-time station with a tiny transmitter.
And then we were trying to figure out exactly how somebody could get away with this, you know, how somebody could actually physically do it. They had to be stationed between our broadcast location studio there on Bradley Place in Chicago and our transmitter downtown. So they had to get in between there somehow and break into the signal. I thought the funny thing about it was, as far as I remember, there was only one copy of the actual off-air, and it was immediately locked into the news director's office, into a cabinet, and no one saw it. So I think whatever's out there, YouTube or whatever, is somebody who just happened to be taping the news that night for some reason on a VHS machine, and he got what he got.
The interruption lasts around 30 seconds. First, the screen goes black. And then after a few seconds, a person appears wearing a brown suit and a black tie. They're wearing a rubber mask, dancing back and forth and nodding their head. In the background, a big piece of what looks like corrugated metal is tilting back and forth. The edges of the video are distorted. The mask that this person is wearing is the face of a fictional character from 1985 named Max Headroom.
Max Headroom here. Yes, that enormous cuss to Cinemax. I really am here. The original Max Talking Headroom Show.
Max Headroom was a TV talk show host who was supposed to be from our not-so-distant future, a future where the world is run by TV executives, malicious power-hungry TV executives who make it a crime to turn off your television. When a television news reporter gets into an accident, a hacker rebuilds him as a computer. Max Headroom, the world's first computer-generated TV host, coming at you from 20 minutes into the future. So, when someone in this Max Headroom mask actually did come at you, in the middle of the 9 o'clock news, fiction and reality merged, and for some viewers, it was terrifying. We're sort of trained as viewers that the only time a TV show is interrupted is because something bad has happened, or is about to. And then, 2 hours later, on a completely different channel, it happened again, during a broadcast of Doctor Who.
You should talk often with the old ones of your tribe. That is the only way to learn.
I'll get you a hot drink, miss.
Why, I've done some dry clothes.
He's a freaking nerd. I think I've got a chest worse than that. Working with Jesus.
What appears to be the same person, wearing the same suit and mask, comes back onto the screen. But this time, they're talking. The person leans down and picks up a can of Pepsi, then throws it at the camera. Then they start waving their head back and forth, before bringing their face right up to the camera lens. Then they start dancing and singing. They keep pointing their finger at the camera. Then they bend over, and it looks like the video cuts to them with their pants pulled down, exposing their rear end. Someone else is on the screen, too. It appears to be a woman, with her head out of the frame, and she starts spanking this person with a fly swatter. And then it's over. It lasted just over a minute.
As far as I can tell, a massive electric shock. He died instantly.
This time it happened on Chicago's WTTW, the PBS station.
I got a call from the master control operator that told me that they had lost control of the transmitter and someone else was broadcasting on our airways.
This is Larry Oker. He wasn't just an engineer at WTTW. He was the engineer in charge of all the engineers. He was at home, not watching television, when his phone rang.
They had control of everything. We couldn't even turn the transmitter off. We couldn't do anything until they went off the air. It was loss of complete control.
I mean, I can think of the different kind of nightmare calls that engineers would get. But if someone calling saying, we've lost control, it's about as bad as it gets, huh?
It's about as bad as it gets. It's terrible. You can't turn it off. You can't turn it on. You can't do anything. They can put anything they want on the air.
When I saw the video of it, I kept thinking to myself, this seems like a dream.
Yes, it's sort of like a dream. Yes, of how dreams are fuzzy and you really don't think you're watching what you're watching. It's sort of like a dream.
It was shortly after 6 o'clock, somewhere between 6 and 7, when he came in and informed me what had taken place overnight.
This is Al Skirkowitz. He was a broadcast engineer for WTTW for 40 years. Larry Oker was his boss. He had just arrived at work when Larry told him the news.
For a broadcast operation to be interjected that way, it's a serious invasion. It's like somebody breaking into your house. It interrupts your air, and you're very proud of the quality of your air signal and the programmings that you actually broadcast. So to have somebody take that over from you became sort of personal for every one of our engineering staff.
Al Skirkowitz says he knew exactly who Max Headroom was when he heard about it, and that it's kind of funny that the person in the video was throwing cans of Pepsi, not Coke.
At the time, this was in 1987, Max Headroom was a character that was supposed to be the very first virtual person, and it was used for a Coke ad campaign. And so he had this kind of straight-up hair that was not really hair. You know, he looked like it was a cartoon character of sorts, but it was a popular campaign for Coke at the time. And so that made it possible for people to buy Max Headroom masks for Halloween, for instance. So you could go to any Halloween store and pick up one of these Max Headroom masks that would slip over your head.
So this image was pretty well known.
Yes, it was.
The hack was major news in Chicago. The Chicago Tribune described it as evidently the work of a sophisticated video pirate with an unsophisticated sense of humor. News stations interviewed people who'd seen the incidents live on their televisions. One man said, "I got so upset that I wanted to bust the TV set." Another man said that whoever did this just wanted attention, and that the interruption was like throwing a brick through a window. A young boy simply said, "It was very, very funny."
And then the next evening, I'm in the office. We've got CBS National News on, and there I am.
Dan Rohn.
On a national news broadcast, they're doing a big piece on this thing. And I thought, well, wow, maybe it is a little bit more serious. And it was my understanding that the FCC took it very seriously, and the government did all they could to find out who did it and have yet to been able to crack the case.
It's one of the most bizarre crimes in TV history, one with no discernible means, motive, or opportunity. I'm Phoebe Judge. This is Criminal. Support for Criminal comes from Ritual. Ritual's Essential for Women is a multivitamin with an ingredients label you can trust. Ritual uses a delayed-release design in their capsules. That means your body absorbs what it needs when it needs it. That also makes it easy on your stomach, and you don't even need to take it with food. And while some vitamins smell terrible, Ritual puts a peppermint oil-infused tab in each bottle that keeps each bottle smelling fresh. Ritual's Essential for Women works to support your brain, bones, and red blood cells, and it's USP verified, meaning the ingredients label matches exactly what's inside, so you know what you're putting in your body. I've been taking Ritual every day for a few months now. My favorite things about it are that it doesn't smell or taste like other vitamins, and that it has omega-3 DHA and vitamin D3. Ritual's Essential for Women 18+ is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/criminal. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18+ to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/criminal for 25% off.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Chicago Sun-Times published an article with the headline, "Two Channels Interrupted to the Max." It quoted an FCC spokesperson who said that whoever was involved could face up to $100,000 in fines and a year in jail, and that additional federal obscenity charges could also be brought by the U.S. Attorney's Office. It was a serious crime. Pretend that I'm 5 years old.
Right.
What were they actually doing in order to interrupt this signal?
What they did was they had a portable transmitter they would use in news gathering, had probably a 2-foot diameter parabolic antenna on it, and they were just pointing it at Sears Tower, and that you could tell if you was in the business where the transmitters were, where the antennas were on top of Sears Tower. So they could pre-aim it and during the day, even though this was at night, and aim it at Sears Tower, they would probably intercept our signal.
Were any of you looking at each other at TTW saying, "Well, I've always thought he was a little sketchy"? Was there any internal thought that maybe it was one of you?
Of course, you know, that's the kind of thing that would jump into your head, but the penalty that would be levied should somebody actually be found out by the FCC would mean immediate dismissal from the station, certainly an impossible task to be hired within the broadcast community ever again. So the weight of the violation would have been an extreme for any of the people that worked at either our station or at WGN. And we took an extreme amount of pride in our capabilities, in our air signal, in the station that we worked for. We look back at it now and kind of laugh from time to time, but at the time, it was like we had had a home invasion. It makes you suspect everybody that you talk to. It makes you think that it might happen again at any point in time.
Al Skirkowitz says that the day after the broadcast intrusion, he had had discussions with his union, with maintenance staff, and with the director of engineering. Everyone was talking about it. He says that by 9 a.m., they had sent the first record of complaint to the Federal Communications Commission.
I've investigated things from stuck radio microphones on vessels to people intentionally jamming the police and swearing at them, you know, with stolen or police radios, or clock radios that accidentally generate a signal that interferes with something else nearby.
This is Jim Higgins. He was working at the FCC when the Max Hedrum incident happened.
I was working on various things, inspecting television stations, special projects, studying interference to the Voice of America, and the Max Hedrum incident popped up.
Jim Higgins was assigned to the Max Hedrum case because he had worked on a similar incident that happened the year before. This hacker called himself Captain Midnight. On April 27th, 1986, someone took over HBO.
This is a little worse than bothering a couple of stations in Chicago. He transmitted to a satellite in geostationary orbit over the top of an HBO signal. HBO was uplinking a movie at the time, The Falcon and the Snowman, as a matter of fact, and turned on his transmitter and pointed it at HBO's satellite. And this person put up a message, a text message.
It said, "Good evening, HBO, from Captain Midnight. $12.95 a month? No way. Showtime, movie channel, beware." HBO had recently announced that they would start charging people $12.95 a month for the service. Previously, if you had a satellite dish in your backyard, you could just aim it up at HBO's signal and get it for free. A man named John McDougall decided that he was going to try and do something about it.
He sold backyard dishes on the side. So he was a backyard dish dealer, and his motive obviously was if HBO scrambled and people had to pay a monthly fee to get it, then maybe his dish business wouldn't do so well. So
McDougall was arrested and charged with illegally operating a satellite uplink transmitter. He accepted a plea deal and was put on probation for a year and fined $5,000. That year, Congress passed something called the Electronic Communications Privacy Act of 1986. It contained a provision that made satellite hijacking a felony. The Max Hedrum incident, which occurred just 1 year later, didn't involve satellite hijacking, but it did result in airwaves being taken over, and it did scare people. The FCC and FBI both investigated the Max Hedrum incident, but could find no leads on who could have done this or why.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
So the Max Headroom incident was never solved.
That's correct. You know, the FCC had some ideas of a couple of people that might have been involved, but never enough evidence to pin it on anybody.
Jim Higgins and Al Skirkowitz both think that the person who did this had to have been an engineer with the knowledge to have set something like this up. Jim Higgins thinks that they must have been proud of their work and that it pops up every once in a while online because they want to remind people of what they pulled off.
In my view, those people who continue to bring it up and ask questions about it and post questions about it were either involved or know who was involved in the incident. Right? Does the criminals always, you know, they're proud of their achievement.
So they don't want it. You know, they don't want it to go away. They want people to remember this.
Perhaps that's my theory anyway. So maybe someday someone will make an admission, but for now we don't know.
Al Skirkowitz thinks it was probably just a dumb prank.
My real suspicion is this was not a vicious, intentional act. It was the act of a couple of people drinking beer in back of somebody's garage going, you know, if we could do this, I've got this piece of equipment over there, and I know this guy's got a dish over here, and maybe for a case of beer, we can get this all together and do something. That's the way I think it really happened.
There's one place where it's still being actively investigated. Reddit. There are lots of theories. One of them, called the J&K theory, comes from a user who says that when he was 13, he was friends with some local hackers and overheard two brothers, who he calls J&K, talking about something big. They then told him to watch WTTW later that night. Another theory says that it was most likely a person who had ties to the local Chicago broadcast community. This is also WTTW engineer Larry Oker's theory. He says it had to be an inside job. Only a TV engineer would have that kind of know-how. And Larry says engineers can be grumpy. It makes me think that everybody in their own position and own profession has the ability to become a menace, right?
Right.
I mean, in
yes.
some way.
Yes, right.
If you're a painter, you throw the wrong color paint all over the house. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, engineer, you say, screw it, I'm taking over the airwaves. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have the ability to shake things up.
I don't think it was meant to be essentially bad or really a criminal act, but it was just saying, I'll show you what I can do. And that's what they did.
There's evidence to back up Larry Oker's theory. Although the voice in the video is heavily distorted, you can hear it say the name Chuck Swirsky. Chuck Swirsky was Dan Rohn's colleague at WGN. You can also hear the voice say, I just made a giant masterpiece for all the greatest world newspaper nerds. This is very likely a reference to the Chicago Tribune. Their slogan is World's Greatest Newspaper. That's how WGN got its name. On the other hand, the person in the video also seems to be referencing cartoons and hemorrhoids and the Temptations, so who can say? Whatever this person was trying to say, it can't be a coincidence that they're wearing a Max Headroom mask. In Max Headroom's world, a broadcast signal intrusion is punishable by death. We called Matt Frewer, the actor who played Max Headroom.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Frewer, and I played a character called Max Headroom back in the 80s.
You might remember him as the next-door neighbor in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, or Dr. Leakey on Orphan Black. We wanted his take on the Max Headroom incident. After all, it is his face.
It was very surreal and flattering, and in a way, kind of expected, you know, that Max, being the subversive character that he was, and he was born of a hacker, why not? You know, and a hacker would use him in a subversive way. And in a lot of ways, it was very flattering, because Max himself is kind of the ultimate satire, because he's Mr. TV, he's on a TV, and it's about a TV network. So I guess it makes perfect sense that he would be used as a tool of something subversive, you know?
When you read through all the theories on Reddit and other places online, you sort of get the impression that if we did figure out who did this and why, the videos would lose their power. Maybe we don't want it to just be a guy with a grudge or some kids screwing around. Nothing fascinates us like an unsolved case, especially one coming from 20 minutes into the future. Criminal is created by Lauren Spohr and me. Nadia Wilson is our senior producer. Our producers are Susanna Robertson and Aaron Wade. Audio mix by Rob Byers. Julian Alexander makes original illustrations for each episode of Criminal. You can see them at thisiscriminal.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Criminal Show. Criminal is recorded in the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. We're a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. I'm Phoebe Judge. This is Criminal.
Radiotopia. From PRX.